Good morning. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Today we're going to talk about Latino and Native American voters here in New Mexico. That includes, of course, Hispanic and Latino voters. We're going to look at some of the recent poll results as to who folks are planning to vote for. And we're also going to talk about some of the issues that are important to these particular populations here in New Mexico. Joining us in just a few minutes will be Gabriel Sanchez. He is Director of Research for Latino Decisions, a survey firm focused on the Latino population. He's also an associate professor of political science at the University of New Mexico, and he'll be joining us in the studio in just a few minutes. But first, we're going to start off with Sarah Gustavus. She is, of course, a reporter here at KUNM. Many of you are familiar with her voice and perhaps even her pretty face. She's also doing reporting for New Mexico PBS and NPR and the Fronteras Changing America Desk. But you left us for a little bit, Sarah, and you went across the pond to London, and you earned a master's degree in media and communication focusing on immigration, which, of course, is an issue that you did a lot of coverage for us here at KUNM during your time here prior to going to school. So talk to me a little bit about how your perspective on immigration as a political issue in the U.S. has changed after your graduate work.
Well, immigration is a really interesting and really complex topic, and I wanted to go to school abroad, and I wanted to be able to do some comparative kind of research, and that's why I chose to go to London. London is a very immigrant-rich city with a lot of diversity, a lot of different kinds of people from all over the world in London, and also a lot of conversations, political conversations, about what the United Kingdom's policy should be about immigration, what the European Union's policies should be about immigration as well. And so I think what I really walked away with is that the immigration issues today are really tied to history and are tied to in Europe, it's tied to former colonies. There's a lot of immigration ties that continue today with people still coming over to join family or people having business connections to various parts of the world. And so it's really important, I think, to not let folks forget. As a journalist, I want to connect us from what's going on today back to what's happened before. Because even just a few decades ago, I think we in all societies can get really have a short-term memory. And so it was really interesting to compare that. And I think that great to see that there are so many things that are the same and also things that are different. There are many different ways to approach immigration. And that's one of the things that I'm thinking about as I get back into reporting here in the United States.
So what are some of the major kind of additions to your perspective on immigration in the U.S. as a political issue coming out of this work and out of your experience reporting in the U.S. as you look at this 2012 election season, analyze immigration for me a little bit in the political context
of what's going on this year.
Yeah, I mean, is it as big of an issue as it is in Britain? Is it smaller? It's grown as an issue, and it's kind of like fluctuating as an issue almost in the U.S.
I think it's fluctuating as an issue in both places for sure. This year, it seems like, with the economy still having a hard time, and that's exactly the same in Europe, and that's the same in Britain. They have a lot of talk about austerity measures and cutting back on social services and a lot of things that people want to maintain, but the economy is really struggling. And so that definitely dominates instead of immigration. But immigration comes up so frequently. Immigration forces us to ask questions about who are we and how do we welcome people from different places in the world. And there's not one particular answer on that, but that's a conversation. And over there, I would say what's different than the U.S. is there is a lot of talk about asylum and a lot of talk about refugees. The United States takes in an incredible number of refugees, which are a little different set of circumstances for those folks. But it's people coming in from other parts of the world. And I think it should be connected, and it is connected. And it just doesn't, asylum doesn't come up here in the United States as much as it does in Britain.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show, and we are taking your calls and comments this morning. The local number to call is 277-5866 in the Albuquerque area. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can post a comment online at KUNM.org. You'll see a link there, comments online, right in the post for this particular show. Go ahead and click on that, and there's a place at the bottom to post comments if you would like. Of course, those comments are available to anyone using our website. And you can also send emails to us, and that email address is callinshow@kunm.org. Gabriel Sanchez from the University of New Mexico Political Science Department will be joining us in just a few minutes. But let's take a call, an early call this morning. Glenn in Hema Springs, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. For having this, I was impressed with your the white lady married into family when she said she noted.
Hey, Glenn, I'm going to have to ask you to call back because your phone connection is a little bit wonky, and we're hearing about one out of every two words. So I know that you'll give us a call right back. We'll see if we can get a better connection. I do know that Glenn wanted to bring up the question about driver's licenses here in New Mexico and the fact that New Mexico allows undocumented immigrants to get driver's licenses. And this is an issue that you have covered in the past, and it's also an issue that continues to be at stake here in New Mexico. We're going to hear a little bit more from Gabriel Sanchez about the Latino decisions polling on this issue and other issues. But talk to me a little bit about the relationship between the driver's license issue and elections and voter ID. How are these related?
You know, I've actually, coming back and diving into election coverage this year, I was a little bit surprised that driver's licenses weren't more of an issue in the election this year, that it wasn't coming up in more of the local campaigns. It seems to be coming up a little bit. It's something that people are talking about here and there, but the economy is still such a big issue. Some of those other issues are still dominating. I think it still matters, and I think that we're looking at driver's licenses being a really important issue in the next legislative session, and that discussion continuing about whether New Mexico will keep that policy in place. It's been the policy in New Mexico since 2003 that folks can get driver's licenses regardless of immigration status. So that allows undocumented immigrants to obtain a driver's license. Washington State is the only other state that allows that. Utah has a policy. It's not exactly the same. But it's something that I think that we're looking at here, that people are going to be looking at here in New Mexico. Some cities have talked about bringing driver's licenses or IDs back into play. And so I think it's an evolving conversation. It's far from over. It has been mentioned to me by some folks that driver's licenses, the debate over how to handle that is connected in some ways to potential voter ID laws that would require people to show a photo ID at the polls. Advocates for Native American voters, for Hispanic and Latino voters, have talked about how that might make it difficult for some people to vote. Older people, poor people who don't drive. It really could have an impact on some potential voters and their ability to access the ballot. So it's a conversation that's continuing.
It looks like we have Glenn back on the line. Glenn in Hema Springs, thanks for calling back.
Yeah, I'm on a better phone. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
I was very impressed, as I started to say before, at the white woman you interviewed this morning, married into a Latino family, noting the Republican convention with all the white faces. As I deal with some of my Republican neighbors here in Hema Springs, I just have kept feeling this undercurrent of racism involved here. And I'm really happy you interviewed that woman and that she brought that out. Governor Martinez wanting to trash our driver's licenses for the undocumented, I just think that's pushing us in a direction where we don't want to go. I would rather have people with driver's licenses, if they're undocumented, so that they can be tracked. And I think for the most part, people who go for those are people who are attempting to be responsible citizens. I'm thankful for Somos Un Pueblo Unido in Santa Fe for pushing that, and I'm hoping that our people in the legislature will not cave in on that with Governor Martinez still trying to trash that. Finally, my daughter, adopted from Central America, initially said, "I'm not going to vote. I don't think this country cares about us. There's no immigration reform." And has now changed her mind. She's going to vote for Obama because at least Obama has done something for the children who were born to undocumented. So I see just a lot of different issues going on, and I'm really hoping that New Mexico gets its people out to vote. Thanks for this discussion today.
Thanks for your call, Glenn. I'd like to introduce Gabriel Sanchez. He is Director of Research for Latino Decisions. It's a survey firm focused on the Latino population. He's also an Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of New Mexico. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
So I want to return to this. We were talking about driver's licenses. Of course, it's this very big issue here in New Mexico. Can you briefly go over the results from the recent poll that Latino Decisions did of Hispanic voters in New Mexico and what voters were feeling about that particular issue, the driver's licenses?
Sure. So just some quick context. I mean, that was a survey statewide of New Mexico, but particularly of Latino voters, conducted by Latino Decisions, funded by America's Voice. And, you know, big context of that survey was looking at immigration issues as well as, you know, voting trends. And we really wanted to drill down on the driver's license issue. Obviously, that's been a hot topic state of New Mexico. Been some other polls out there floating around suggesting that overall, New Mexicans were strongly in favor of repealing the law, including a large segment of the Latino population. So we drilled down on that, asked a couple of questions, and I think the key question, the one that I want to focus on in more detail, basically provided Latino voters with the context of two options. Do you want to repeal the law, meaning not allow undocumented immigrants to have access to a driver's license, period, the governor's proposal, obviously, as well as an alternative suggestion, which would be allow undocumented immigrants to have access to a driver's license, be able to apply for it, but with added restrictions as well as greater penalties for fraud. And when you pose it that way, which I think is the proper way to pose it because that's the debate in the state legislature right now, you see that 70% of Latino voters, so keep in mind these are all likely voters, folks that are going to vote in this election, 70% of those individuals say, no, we want to allow them to have access, but let's make the law a little bit tougher. You know, let's increase penalties for fraud. I think that's pretty telling in terms of where public opinion is likely on that issue overall. I think too often pollsters as well as, you know, pundits frame it as black or white. You either allow them to have access or you don't. Reality is, right, there's compromise in the state legislature, and I think that's really what the public wants to see. Can we figure out how to get it done, improve the law, but don't allow the total access to be restricted?
Well, there's been a lot of talk this election season about polls themselves and about the way that polls are performed, the selection of voices of voters who are included in those polls. Can you talk about how representative this Latino Decisions poll is? And does it represent Latino and Hispanic voters across the state of New Mexico, or is it just a small slice that could perhaps misrepresent the population?
That's a key question. I mean, people don't realize that polling is a science. The better you are at the methodology behind it, the more, you know, influential the results can be. You know, I'll say from the standpoint of Latino Decisions, obviously I'm affiliated with the group, so, you know, you have to take some of this with a grain of salt. But we are in the business of specifically polling the Latino population. That's our focus. So our methodology is aimed at ensuring you have the proper representation of all Latino voters. So that means that we're capturing segments of all pieces of the state of New Mexico in the context of this poll. And probably most importantly, all of our folks that are actually on the phones conducting the surveys are fully bilingual. A lot of other survey firms across the country, even if they do some polling on Latinos, they don't have bilingual staff. And what that means is you're missing a large segment of the population that might be English dominant, but they prefer in some cases to do surveys in Spanish. You cut about that 40% of the Latino population out of your poll results, you're getting a much biased sample. So that's one of the methodological differences. The other thing is simple, and that's just the greater the number of people you ask, you know, the better representative it's going to be. A lot of these national polls floating around out there, they'll have, you know, maybe 100, 200 Latinos, period, in a national sample. You're going to have a lot of variation in terms of attitudes.
So. Yeah, that's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to wrap my brain around that. You sampled 400 voters in New Mexico.
Correct.
Okay. In this context of polling and why do polls? What is the impact of doing a poll during election season other than kind of gathering information to analyze over time? Do poll results have an impact on the outcome of elections in your mind?
Absolutely. You know, taking a step back, you know, if this is, you know, poli-sci 101, we think about this as a representative democracy where the public's role is to provide input into the representatives on what they want, what their demands are, what their interests are. How else are you going to do that? Unfortunately, in a population this large, even in the state of New Mexico, it's difficult for a state representative, a governor, to have the pulse of the population. So what a survey does, a poll, if it's done well, is it provides information to elected officials on the context of what voters want. So I think that's the underlying value of a survey. Now, obviously, you have to do it right to capture those attitudes effectively. In the context of elections, what polls do is it provides pundits, the candidates, the parties, a snapshot in time of what the issues are that voters care about, how they stand on those issues. It allows elected officials to figure out, okay, if I want to be elected, if I want to stay in the business of being an elected official, I better be responsive to the constituents. So that's, I think, the big picture why we look at polls, particularly during the election season.
Do voters look at polls? Do polls this is a question I'm going to ask you listeners also. But first to Professor Sanchez, are voters affected by polls? Is there evidence to show that voters change their votes based on polling results showing what their neighbors are thinking and feeling?
Well, there's definitely the possibility of that. I mean, I don't know how many media calls I get a day these days, and most of them are asking that question. You know, if the poll results, for example, are showing one candidate is far out ahead, is that going to decrease the likelihood that the folks losing, you know, their voters are going to show up at the polls? And I think more than anything else, I think...
Or vice versa, right?
Or vice versa.
My candidate's winning, I don't need to go vote.
I think more than impacting the overall vote choice of voters, I think it impacts enthusiasm and likelihood of voting. So turnout, I think, is the key. It's exactly as you put it. My candidate's ahead. I don't need to show up. I don't need to wait in line to vote. My candidate's way behind. There's no point. I think that's the worry about polls being able to impact the electorate.
So, KUNM listener, is your voting decision affected by the results of polls that you read about, hear about in the media? Give us a call. The number is 277-5866. That's the local number here in Albuquerque. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can send an email to callinshow@kunm.org or post your comments online at kunm.org. I want to come back to you, Professor Sanchez, to ask about the history of representation of Latino voters in polling results. I've posted a link to latinodecisions.com on our website, KUNM.org, so you can go find this blog posting from one of your colleagues at Latino Decisions talking about how historically Latino voters have been underrepresented in polls to a significant degree, so that polls end up being inaccurate over time because Latino voters are not sampled, are not given bilingual,
right.
Explain a little bit that to us.
Thanks for the plug for the LD blog. I'd suggest that folks take a look at that. There's a lot of great content on there. That blog in particular, what we were doing is analyzing over time, you know, the likelihood of these polls missing the Latino population in a significant way. And I think the place to start is the overall outcome is if you miss how, for example, in this case, likely Latino voters are to vote for Romney versus Obama, given that the Latino population in the electorate is about 11%, close to 12% in some statistics these days, you can potentially have a significant bias in your results and suggest that it's a much tighter race than it actually might be. So a couple of the reasons why a lot of these polls have done a bad job historically capturing Latino voters is, one, we've talked a little bit about just not having enough Latinos in their sample. When you only have 100 or 200 Latinos in a big sample nationwide, your margin of error, meaning that the chance that you have, you know, 5-6 percentage points off here or there, increases, you know, exponentially. So that's probably the biggest issue. Second is not having the right representation. I think the easiest example to point to these days is Florida. A lot of the polls looking at Florida, obviously a key battleground state, are overrepresenting the percentage of Cuban American voters in the Latino population. People don't realize this these days in Miami-Dade County. Cuban Americans are no longer the dominant Latino population. The demographics have changed significantly across the country. Florida is no exception to that rule. So when you overestimate the Cuban American population, which historically has voted more Republican, obviously you're going to have a more Republican-leaning sample. So that's another dynamic, is just misrepresenting the overall population in states. And finally, one of the other dynamics is bilingual polling. It costs more. You have to have a little more resources to be able to do it effectively, which is why I think a lot of folks cut corners. But you're missing a large segment of the population. At Latino Decisions, roughly 40% of the folks that we survey, and again, these are all U.S. citizens, likely voters, registered voters, prefer to take the survey in Spanish. You don't do that, you know, you're missing a large swath of the overall electorate. Big picture on that blog, I think, is even though we're talking about this dynamic historically, the main point is most of these polls right now in 2012 are falling into the same traps. And as a consequence, most of these polls are suggesting it's a much tighter race, particularly in some of the battleground states, than we actually perceive that it is, largely driven by the Latino vote, as well as the African-American vote. A lot of folks are having poll results saying African-Americans are going to support Obama at about 80, 82%. That's just unreasonable. I don't know what survey firm with any reputation would go with that number when all of us that do this for a living would tell you at least 90%, more likely 95%.
Sarah Gustavus.
Yeah, in that poll that you did, you also looked at the issues that voters care about, and a couple came out on top, the economy and immigration reform. I'm wondering, are those issues what drives enthusiasm and gets people to the polls?
I think definitely the context of immigration. One of the key issues, the first numbers I ever saw on the projected Latino vote had Obama basically getting about the same percentage he did in 2008, about 68-69%. I knew at that point it was not going to be a question of will Latino voters vote for Romney. It was going to be a question of enthusiasm and turnout. Immigration issue is interesting because on one hand you've got self-deportation, right? Romney's kind of infamous statement in his context of immigration. So enthusiasm isn't very high voting Republican, but can't let the president off the hook. He campaigned on comprehensive immigration reform. It didn't happen. The deportation numbers under his watch have been the highest in U.S. history, right, in terms of looking at this year to year. So I think Latino voters say self-deportation, Obama and his policies, what happened to comprehensive immigration reform? So I think the enthusiasm among Latino voters has not been very high because they say, what's our options? You know, we're not in love with either candidate. And so I think really the issue of immigration is where you look at. If it's salient to Latino voters, there's not been a lot of action. Until recently, it wasn't even discussed among the political candidates running for president. I think that drives enthusiasm down a little bit, and that's been something that we've been watching very closely over the last year and a half.
Does that mean that in races like this one that are at least with the presidential race this year, that is, I heard the term dead heat in the news this morning. So does that mean that it's less an issue of undecided voters and who they vote for and more of an issue of voters actually going out and voting?
Well, I think it's twofold.
It's turnout instead.
You know, I think it's twofold. I mean, I think overall enthusiasm, largely because of the economy being where it is, as well as just total lack of approval for Congress right now. That's the one thing I think that's saving the president in the context of this election, particularly in the context of Latino voters. You ask them, who do you blame for the economy? Who do you blame for immigration? And I think it's divided, but an overall percentage say, I blame Republicans in Congress because they perceive that this kind of do-nothing Congress really is working against the president's initiatives. And so I think overall voters say, you know, what's the point? You know, we go out and vote in historic numbers in 2008, and not much has changed, I think, is the perception among a lot of folks. So I think that's the context, you know, is turnout on both sides, you know, trying to drive your base and make sure that you get your numbers that you perceive are going to vote your way, as well as aiming for those undecided voters, those folks that are a little bit detached from the system, trying to get them back in, which is what happened in 2008, which is why we saw such huge historic turnout numbers across all groups.
What do you think about when you are hearing about poll results in media coverage? Do you feel that poll results generally are accurate in how they reflect your community? The number to call this morning on the KUNM Collin Show is 277-5866. That's the local number here in Albuquerque. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can email collinshow@kunm.org or post your comments online. We're talking to Sarah Gustavus, a reporter here in New Mexico, and Gabriel Sanchez. He is Director of Research for Latino Decisions and an Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of New Mexico. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with your calls. Thanks. This election season, tune in to KUNM for a special series produced by the KUNM News Team, Voices Behind the Vote. Hear from voters in New Mexico about their lives and politics.
Matthew says, judge not lest you be judged. Walk what you preach. Why don't you leave that person's problems between them and their doctor and God?
That's the KUNM Voices Behind the Vote series during Morning Edition and All Things Considered each week before Election Day on KUNM.
Greetings. This is the Countess Dracula inviting you to join a few of my closest friends on Freeform Halloween Day. 5 Freeform DJs in the same room spinning tunes for you. Ooh, scary, ghoulish, creepy, and fun. A Halloween extravaganza on KUNM Wednesday, October 31st, beginning at 1:30. Be there or I may just bite you.
Support for KUNM comes from the not-for-profit New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where members earn rewards for their relationship, checking, credit cards, auto loans, and mortgages. Details and calculator on member rewards at nmefcu.org.
This is the KUNM Collin Show. It's just about 8:30. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Thanks for joining us. We're talking predominantly about Latino voters today. Initially, I had intended to talk a little bit more about Native American voters also, and we'll touch on that topic. but we may have to continue that conversation on another day. Today we're joined by Gabriel Sanchez, Director of Research for Latino Decisions, and Sarah Gustavus. She is a reporter here at KUNM. She's also doing reporting for New Mexico PBS, Latino USA, NPR, and specifically focusing on issues of immigration. And we do have full phone lines, so let's go straight to callers. Romeo in Albuquerque, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for the line. Great show. Important subject. I'm going back to what was just said before the break, you know, I'm just wondering why people are so geeked up about Obama when, like, he was promising the Latino community that he'd ease up on the deportations when, in fact, what do you know, they're up higher than during the Bush administration. And that was only in 4 years that he broke that record. I mean, imagine what he can do in four more years. But I digress. He also said he'd end the war on drugs. And, well, we know how that's going. And also, you know, I'm just wondering, like, why, you know, these polls, like, have any, like, merit. Because it's kind of like the debates, you know, like, it's run by this new Commission on Presidential Debates. I liked it better when the League of Women Voters ran it. I think they quit because they didn't want to sign a 12-page contract that the Republicans and the Democrats, you know, wanted them to sign so that they couldn't ask certain questions. I mean, it's such a scam run by these two parties. What I got to say is vote a third party. Let's all throw our vote away together. You know, these two parties have had this country held hostage for 150 years. It's time for a change. And if you don't like the way it goes for the next 4 years with a third-party candidate, you can go back to voting the corporations back into office. That's all I got to say. I'm out.
Thanks, Romeo. Professor Sanchez, your response.
Well, I think take a couple of different things. I won't touch the third-party dynamic. You know, I'll get rambling on here, and I'll be like I'm in class, and we'll burn an hour quickly.
But we might have to come back to it, though, because it is a big conversation this year. I mean, there are write-in candidates running for Senate and congressional races here in New Mexico. There are third-party candidates who weren't allowed in the debates. I mean, it is kind of a rising conversation about a dual-party system, and do people feel served by that? But
right.
So we will come back to it.
So I'll try to be quick on a couple of points. The first one was, you know, why are folks high on the president in the context of some of his missteps and some of the lack of opportunity to do some things? I think the key is, you know, folks aren't as high on the president as they were back in 2008, at least in the context of Latino voters. I mean, they're still going to vote for him in about the same clip that they did in 2008. I would say that has much more to do with what the Republican Party is doing, much more so than their perceptions about what Democrats and specifically the president is doing.
Meaning more voting against Republicans as opposed to for Democrats.
Yeah, I mean, folks got to remember, if the Latino population is saying that immigration policy is, if not first, second in their minds in the context of how they're going to vote nationally as well as in the state of New Mexico, when you look at the Republican primaries, and this goes all the way back to 2006, a lot of the language that they use in the context of immigration is perceived, even by folks that have been here since, you know, the 1500s, 1600s, as being anti-Latino or inflammatory. And so I think they say, wait a minute, I can't trust the Republican Party on the issue of immigration. You know, the president, on one hand, he says the right things, right? I think his kind of stance, kind of quasi-Dream Act, more recently kind of pumped up some increased enthusiasm. So they recognize that he's not perfect, but they trust him a little bit more than they do, you know, the Republicans, given what the Republicans are doing, which is moving so far to the right that I think it alienates a lot of Latino voters.
Sarah, you were nodding your head as Gabe was speaking. What were you thinking about that?
I was just thinking that it's something that people talk about is, you know, we have Governor Susana Martinez, the first Latina governor in the nation, a lot of people watching for her. And I watched.
Or 50 states. Puerto Rico had a Hispanic governor.
Oh, well, thanks.
Just want to say, I've been corrected on that also. So
okay.
I'll carry the correction through.
The standard 50. You know, she's a very strong Republican governor, and I think that a lot of people are watching for her, and I think that she walks a very kind of fine line in deciding how to talk about these kinds of issues and trying. It seems like she's tried to add some nuance in the past to talking about. And there was a Newsweek article about her in May, and then I did some coverage for Latino USA talking about how the governor had spoken about the Romney campaign's comments on self-deportation and issues like that. And she had said, I don't know what self-deportation is. So it's a really interesting thing. That's why I was nodding my head.
Yeah, I mean, and one thing to look at is if Governor Martinez, for example, that spoke at the convention, has been on his Hispanic Outreach Committee, has disagreed with him publicly on the context of immigration. That tells you something. I think even within the same party, that division shows you that, you know, a lot of smart Republicans say, look, if we don't do something to bridge the gap with Latino voters, we're going to have a hard time not only winning national elections, but winning in a lot of states, because Latino demographics are growing in terms of their electorate across the country. Here in New Mexico, about 40% of the electorate is Latino. If you alienate that population, you know, Hispanic voters are going to drive you out of office. And so I think smart Republicans get it long term. Right. If the party's going to stay relevant, they're going to have to at least soften the language, not necessarily change their policies concretely, but stop using the inflammatory language. I think will go a long way.
Let's take another call. Loretta in Albuquerque, you're on the air.
Thank you. President Obama had the Congress for 2 months and 1 day, and even though there was 51 so-called with the independents, people in the Senate, every proposal he made, the Senate would filibuster, and we know they gave a record number of filibusters. So the president is not a dictator. He needs the Congress to pass these bills. So he had all, including the job bills and then jobs for veterans. The Congress and Senate has blocked all these things. He was very fortunate to get across the stimulus. Because if you read the book, The New New Deal by Michael Grunwald, it'll tell you what the stimulus kept the U.S. economy from really falling into a real depression. So President Obama has tried to do all these things, including immigration reform, but he has been blocked every step of the way. And that is never mentioned, and they blame him for producing no jobs when they're the ones that are, the Republicans are responsible for them, for him not being able to get our country rolling back into the success that it has, that could have happened under his administration. That's all I wanted to tell you. Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Loretta. Let's go to another caller, Veronica in Albuquerque. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a question and a comment. Is you mentioned, you know, a lot of the, when you talk about Latino voters, I think you are missing a huge component. Half of that Latino voters are women, and women that will vote and issues that affect themselves, like reproductive health and health mm-hmm. issues for themselves and their family. So I think, you know, the comments that you're making about Latino voters, if you're missing the issues of Latino women voting, you're missing half of the Latino population.
That's important. I'm glad you brought that
Professor
up.
Professor Sanchez.
You know, we've actually polled specifically on the context of women's issues and the gender gap. I mean, if folks aren't aware of it, that gender gap nationally overall among women is one of the key, if not the key dynamic in terms of this presidential race. That gap among Latinos is even wider. Latinas are much more enthusiastic about voting, so I think their overall turnout numbers are going to be higher than Latino males this election cycle. And they favor Obama at a significant margin when you compare that to Latino males. So, I mean, that's key that you mentioned that. When we polled on, quote-unquote, women's issues, which party do you think is better, do you trust better to tackle those issues? I've been in the business of polling for a good while now. The gap between Latino males and Latinos was about 52%. In terms of overall saying
the gap was 52%.
Overall, the gap between who's better, Democrats or Republicans. So overall, Latinas almost overwhelmingly say, I trust the Democrats much more than the Republicans. That's the widest gap I've ever seen on any question we've asked in a survey over like 10 years. So I think your caller's dead on that dynamic. That's one of the key constituencies. And I think that's going to be one of the key issues when we look back at the 2012 election. You know, what does the Republican Party do, not only with Latino voters overall, but women voters, where they've got some issues there?
We have got a couple email comments and caller comments. Betty called and said that polls have affected her family. When the polls showed a particular candidate was in the lead, they voted for a third-party candidate. In this case, she's talking about Ralph Nader, to not add to the popular vote of the winning candidate. We also got another comment from Matthew, who said that he uses polling information to make that same decision as to whether to vote for a major party or a third-party candidate, meaning I think the assumption is that if there was a close enough race among major party candidates that he would vote major party, but that he says he would honestly rather support and vote for a third party candidate, and so then chooses to do that when he feels like he can make a statement that way. Professor Sanchez, briefly, third-party candidates. Let's do it.
Well, I think your caller's dead on. I mean, if you really perceive that neither party is really serving your interests, you should vote third party, assuming, again, that third party does serve your interests. I think the cop-out response that a lot of folks give is, well, it's a two-headed monster. I don't like either of the two candidates, so I'm just not going to vote this year. I think you want to utilize your vote and make a statement, right? That sends a message that, hey, these two parties are not really serving our interests. Historically, when we look at third-party candidates, they typically pull votes away from the incumbent administration. That's what we've seen historically. I mean, the most obvious would be Ross Perot, which is probably the most famous third-party presidential candidate. But it differs based on nuances, right? There's a lot of talk about former Governor Gary Johnson. Will he impact our state outcome this year? I don't think our state's going to be close enough to really see those numbers, but most of us would suggest that if Governor Johnson's going to have an impact, he's going to pull some votes away from the Republican candidates across not only the presidential level, but some of the lower level races, right? So I think there is some impact there, but it has to be a tight race, as your caller noted.
Now, have you done any, or do you have a sense of whether third parties are reaching out to Latino voters, or people are thinking that they might be addressing some of these issues that people care about?
Well, you know, one important thing, you know, the Hispanic or Latino population is extremely diverse. So, you know, I think any third party, you know, candidate out there probably reaches out to a certain segment of the Latino population, but they don't have the resources that the two dominant parties do to do specific Latino outreach efforts. I mean, think about how most candidates get their message out. It's on TV these days, to a lesser extent, radio. That costs money. And so I think for third-party candidates to really do, let's say, messaging in Spanish, for example, they just don't have the same level of resources that the D's and R's do to really do that nuanced, micro-targeted, you know, approach in terms of outreach.
There are organizations like RootsAction.org. This is a progressive organization that is advocating for folks to vote third-party candidates when the races aren't close, mm-hmm. And to make major party decisions when the races are close. And I find that they call it strategic voting. Let's take another call from Bill in Albuquerque. Good morning, Bill. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. My question is, when doing polling, how is one identified as Latino or Hispanic? Is it just because they have a Spanish last name?
Professor Sanchez.
Another good question. I mean, if a poll is done poorly, they rely primarily on Spanish surname lists. Better polls, and this is another nuance, right? These days, if you're running a good poll, you not only have to capture landlines, but cell phone-only households. That's more likely to occur among the Latino population, so you've got, again, spend a little bit more money and be able to reach out to folks on their cell phone. But at Latino Decisions, you know, we take a number of different steps to do this. One is we use a surname list to capture folks that do have a Hispanic surname. This is key in the state of New Mexico. If you stop there, you're going to miss about 20% of the Hispanic population, obviously Bill Richardson being a primary example of folks that you would miss. So you look for other Hispanic household lists that you buy from private companies that don't have a Spanish surname. And probably most importantly, first question we ask on all of our surveys, we ask you to verify that you're Latino or Hispanic. And if you say you're not, even if you have a Spanish surname, in this state, about 15-20% or so, don't quote me on the number, Native Americans have a Spanish surname, right? So if you say, no, I'm not Hispanic or Latino, then we stop the call and we don't include you in our sample if we're looking only at Latino voters. So that's how it's done, if it's done effectively. Unfortunately, I think a lot of other folks, like your caller noted, just rely on Spanish surname, which, again, can be hugely biased, at least in the context of New Mexico.
Let's take another call. Pat in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning. You were asking if polling did affect my voting. It doesn't affect my voting as much as it affects my getting out there and working for my candidate. The other question I have about polling, though, is it seems like the newscasters spend a lot of time talking about polling as if this were a football game. Mm-hmm. I would much rather hear a little more in-depth reporting on the issues of what they are running on.
Sarah, you were nodding your head. Is that something that you found in your research that people are more interested in issues than polling?
It's not a matter of research. It's that I know that listeners, particularly listeners on KUNM, but I think all potential voters, they really want coverage of the issues and what it means, where the candidates stand. And just as Professor Sanchez was talking about, resources for carrying out polls, there's resources for carrying out journalism. And it takes a little bit more resources. But I do think it's worth it. And I do think it meets our civic duty to provide good media coverage in the state to really get into the issues. It's important. Mm-hmm. It tends to be a lot of polls. That's, you know, it's newsy.
Newsy. That's a newsy word. Let's take another call. Susan in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Thank you for this program. I'd like to have you comment on an ad that I saw and see how much you think this might affect the vote here in New Mexico. I heard that it was an ad either on TV or radio, but after I heard it, it really jogged me that these two Republicans are running, and what they were doing is reminding us that the Democrats who are running against them were appointed by Richardson, and telling us, saying, do you want to, or asking us, do you want to go back to the Richardson time? The way that struck me is that they were, that I think that's the way that Martinez came in and had such, a Republican was able to get in using that issue and holding up her Hispanic last name as and her ethnicity, obviously, as a way to make us go pick this governor.
Professor Sanchez.
I mean, that's key. I think folks forget about the fact that in 2010 in the governor's campaign, she really was campaigning against the Richardson administration, and it was extremely effective. I mean, Governor Richardson, obviously, in terms of his popularity, dropped significantly. And I think if you look at the driver's license bill, again, that was situated in the context of repealing a law that Governor Richardson put in place. So I think a lot of those policies are aimed at taking jabs at the Richardson administration. I did see that ad last night. It was an interesting one, and I think it's still framed in that context. What they're hoping voters will do is still remember that Richardson administration. I think it's a little bit of a gamble because some voters might say, wait a minute, that's old news. I want to hear about how you're going to fix the economy, how you're going to improve the state. But I think they're still trying to rely on that strategy that was extremely successful, you know, back in the governor's first run at the governorship.
We're taking your calls this morning on the KUNM call-in show. The local number is 277-5866. What do you think about media coverage of polls? Do you wish there was less of it and more coverage of issues, or do you like knowing and finding out about what voters in the U.S. and in New Mexico are thinking and feeling about political issues and candidates? You can call 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can email callinshow@kunm.org or post your comments online. Let's go to Joe in Albuquerque. Good morning, Joe. You're on the air. It looks like Joe might not have waited, but maybe he'll call back in a moment. Let's go to a quick break, and this is the KUNM call-in show. We'll be right back.
Established in 1929, UNM Press is a well-known and respected publisher in the fields of anthropology, archaeology, indigenous studies, Latin American history, American studies, Chicana and Chicano studies, art and architecture, and the history, literature, ecology, and cultures of the American West. For more information, please visit unmpress.com. A message from the tax-exempt University of New Mexico Press.
Outpost presents Swiss-born harmonica virtuoso Grégoire Marais, Thursday, October 25th, 7:30 p.m. One of the most in-demand harmonica players on the scene, Marais has performed and recorded with Cassandra Wilson, Kurt Elling, Sting, Prince, and many others. He'll be joined by bassist Matt Brewer and drummer Clarence Penn at the Outpost Performance Space, 210 Yale Southeast. Info at 268-0044 or outpostspace.org. A message from the tax-exempt Outpost Productions.
This is the KUNM call-in show. We're joined this morning by Gabriel Sanchez. He is Director of Research for Latino Decisions, a survey firm focused on the Latino population. He's also an Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of New Mexico. And Sarah Gustavus, she is a reporter here with KUNM. She also does work for New Mexico PBS and a variety of other public media organizations. And we're talking about Latino voters this morning and some of the polling results and issues that have been shown to be of interest and of concern to this particular voting block. Let's go to the phones. Jackie in Albuquerque, you're on the air.
Hi. I really appreciate what you guys are doing here today, too. But I wanted to ask, you know, how much of the polling does the polling really prevent the candidates from talking about the issues, or is it merely a tool that they're trying to use to kind of base ideas and ways that they can promote themselves?
Professor Sanchez.
Well, I think one important thing that all of consumers of political information need to do is first figure out who's paying for the poll. I mean, there's a difference between a poll that's run internally, that, you know, the Republican or Democratic Party polls themselves, and is largely looked at as trying to promote, you know, that their candidate is doing well.
Well, and a story earlier this election season was when the, I think it was the Heather Wilson campaign, mm-hmm. released a poll that showed her not winning the race, which was, I guess, kind of unusual in in-house polling to release negative results about right. your own race. Is that the right way to understand that?
Well, what I would do, you know, is one, you know, I'm talking about this in the context of the media, is look at that one poll as it relates to all the other polls out there within that same time frame. So even though that internal poll showed Wilson, I think, down by 1 point, if I'm remembering the right poll you're talking about, all the other polls had Heinrich up by a pretty significant margin. And so if you look at who's paying for it, you say, well, I can toss out the internal poll from the Republican side, internal poll from the Democrat side, look at the more independent polls, and if they're suggesting one candidate's pretty far out in the lead, that's who I would trust, is the overall snapshot from a number of polls. I think the question in terms of does it prevent candidates from talking about policy, again, a good poll, this statewide poll we were talking about on Latino decisions, had a lot of content about policy. So we're asking voters some sophisticated dynamics about their policy preferences. In a perfect world, the candidates can rely on that and say, okay, maybe I wasn't thinking about, in this context, immigration in that way, but maybe I should. Maybe I should figure out how to vote on issues that the actual population really cares about. So I think if the poll is really intended to capture policy nuances, it can be very useful for candidates. If we're only talking about the horse race, then I think the caller might be right. I wouldn't go as far as saying it prevents the candidates from dealing with policy, but I think they get so focused on the horse race themselves internally within the campaigns that that's all that you really see in terms of the context of the campaign coverage.
How do you, when you create the polling questions that you're talking about that are more nuanced, mm-hmm. How do you create those questions in a way that aren't, I mean, we as reporters often think about how can I ask questions without leading, I don't want to ask leading questions. I don't want to tell this person the kind of answer that I want by the framing of my question. Talk to me about that process as a pollster.
Sure.
And the way that you think about formulating questions and how to get valid results as opposed to you know, the way people think they might want to be as opposed to how they really
right.
feel.
So I'll give you a concrete example on that driver's license question we talked a little bit about earlier. So the way we framed it, right, you've got two options, you know, repeal the law or go with somewhat of a compromise, you know, allow them to have access but with a little bit more requirements, right? What you have to do as a pollster is you realize that whatever option you frame first might drive voters in one direction, right? Because that's the first thing they hear. So what you do is you manipulate
that. Yeah, that sounds good. Yes.
Yeah, sounds great. That's what I want. So you manipulate that. Half the sample gets the question framed in terms of prevent them to have access first. The other half gets the alternative plan. Simple things like that, I think, allow you to have some control over that potential of moving them in one direction or the other. Other is really focusing hard on the question wording itself, making sure you're not using any loaded terms. Some classic examples, if you ask people about their support for social welfare policy generally, you don't use the word welfare, support seems very high. All you have to do is add the word welfare, support drops significantly. That's a loaded term, right? So you have to be very careful on this. Again, it's a science. It's not something you can jump into and say, I want to be a pollster. There's a lot of methodology involved.
Like I've done in front of the post office sometimes in election season.
I think we've all done that. Now, the difference is you're not using your results to potentially impact a campaign. Right?
True. Let's see. We got an email from Carol, and she asked, how much is the issue of pro-choice policy with Democrats an issue with the Hispanic Latino vote in your polling?
Not as much these days as it used to be. I mean, in the context of the New Mexico poll, I think it was less than 1%. You know, what we've seen, and we actually surveyed specifically on this issue, we asked Latinos nationwide or Hispanic population nationwide, when you think about politics and how you're going to drive your vote, is it about issues that used to be, let's say, the moral, you know, issues of same-sex marriage, abortion policy, or is it about the economy? At like a 70% clip, Latino voters are saying it's about the economy. And I think the difference is back in the George W. Bush years, he was extremely effective, according to the Latino vote, with those issues. Abortion, for example, got about 40% of the Latino vote. I think the context is different. That was in an era where you didn't have the Republican Party demonizing Latinos in the context of immigration, and the economy was great. You shift to a different climate, those issues don't have as much traction as they once did. I'm not going to say that there aren't Latino voters out there who care about those issues and it's driving their vote, but it's a much smaller segment than it used to be.
Let's take another call. David calling us from Dallas. You must be listening online, David.
Hi, and it's not Dallas, it's Taos.
Taos. Well, then you're probably listening at 90.9. Good morning. Thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Taos sounds like Dallas. Anyway, I'm a Catholic Latino voter from Taos, and we've already voted. We voted for President Barack Obama, and I took this very seriously because obviously our church lays out guidelines on things to consider when voting for a candidate, and I've been following this very closely, and I was finally decided to vote for Obama because of the fact that Governor Romney, just like a chameleon, he has not had any consistent stand on any of the issues, even the most ethical and moral ones that me as a Catholic would normally consider. And on the other hand, President Obama has been pretty consistent and overall has demonstrated, to me at least, that he has a heart and has a vision which is more consistent than Governor Romney. And so overall, considering everything, I decided in my own mind President Obama is less morally or ethically challenged than Governor Romney. And that's why I voted the way I did.
Thanks for your call, David. We have one more call this morning. Margaret in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I am calling as a Hispanic voter. And as far as immigration goes, I think Obama would probably have a better understanding by simply the fact that he is our first black president. And so he's a humanitarian. He understands the human condition. I think he is heart-filled for the people who have less in this country. And I am just so, you know, there are many issues that he's just right on top for the people. He will work for us. He doesn't care. I mean, and, yeah, we could have a third party, but right now we have two. So let's make the right decision as far as what we need in this country for someone who actually cares for the everyday person.
Thanks for your call, Margaret. We're coming up towards the end of the show, and I wanted to go to each of you, Professor Sanchez with the University of New Mexico Political Science Department and Latino Decisions, Sarah Gustavus, reporter, focusing often on issues of immigration and diversity, ethnic and racial diversity here in New Mexico, and how that affects political behavior. What are you two looking most closely at this last, you know, week and a half or so before the election when you're watching immigration and Latino voters in the news? What are you keeping an eye on most?
Well, I mean, I'm a native New Mexican, so I'm happy to be here speaking with other New Mexicans about these issues. And I think what I'm paying close attention to is, you know, the overall turnout numbers. You know, will Latinos maximize their potential politically? We've been often referred to as the sleeping giant in politics. A lot of potential, not a lot of actualization. And so I'll be really looking to see if this is an election cycle where we capitalize on what we did in 2008, which is a record turnout, and build on that momentum, or will we take a step back? And when we have to think a little bit about how to push candidates to outreach to the community a little bit better and mobilize the population to the extent of getting more of us out to vote. I think that's what I'll be paying attention to.
Record turnout in 2008 in New Mexico, what did those statistics look like?
Don't quote me on this. I believe, at least of the Hispanic population, roughly 55-56 percent of Latinos who were eligible to vote turned out.
Okay.
That's higher than the national average for the Hispanic population.
And higher than New Mexico historically also?
Not quite record-breaking numbers, but better than we've seen in recent memory.
Okay. Sarah, in your reporting work on this political season and immigration and issues that are affecting Latino voters, what are you focusing most on?
Well, I'm already looking ahead to whether or not people who are elected in office do get to some of these issues that I've heard voters talk about. We're doing a Voices Behind the Vote series here on KUNM. I did have some folks say that, you know, we hope that immigration will be an issue, that it will come up again, and folks who are voting for Obama saying they really hope that he'll actually do something if he is elected to a second term, that he would address immigration. So I'm kind of thinking about what this might mean and whether or not those issues are really going to come up that people have been thinking about as they get ready to vote this year.
Thanks to you both for joining us this morning on the KUNM Call-In Show. If you missed part of this program and you'd like to go back to listen to it, we will be posting the audio online at KUNM.org. You can also post your comments about the show or email us comments or suggestions for show topics online at KUNM.org. That's where you can post your comments. You can also send emails to callinshow@kunm.org. We'll be back next week, and we're going to hear from Lana Atkison. She is another political science professor, and she also runs the Election and Democracy Center here at the University of New Mexico. She observes voting in voting centers, and so she'll be bringing us an update of what she's seen so far and look at Election Day. This is KUNM. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Thanks for joining us.